And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
How's it going, everybody? Thursday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen, Nick Alberga back with you, talking fantasy, looking ahead to the stretch run of the NHL season. And Nick, we got a great analytical guest to break it all down today with us.
We do. The one and only Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Thanks so much for joining us. What's going on?
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. I mean, there's a lot to get into, but certainly I wanted to start with something you've been debating on social the last couple of days, the Norris pick. Now, I should preface by saying I'm a traditionalist. Victor Hedman's my boy for life. I'll pick him every season, but thankful for all, I don't get to vote on this award. Is it Cale Makar's award to lose at this point in time?
It feels like that. I don't want to like slight him and say that he doesn't deserve the award because I think he'd be a fine winner, but I don't think it should be as cut and dry because we should be talking about usage and we should be talking about shorthanded play. And yes, he's playing the penalty kill now and he is good in that capacity, but Victor Hedman is right there. Like, obviously he's not playing the toughest minutes, but his minutes are technically tougher than Makar's, you know, with the Lightning still. So you have someone that's playing in all situations and defending that 6-on-5 and, you know, anything the Lightning need, they're putting him out there. I think he's right there. And I don't think Devin Taves is far behind either, which then you get into this whole other conversation. Does it matter the quality of their teammates? Does it matter the quality of their partner? You know, you have two Norris caliber defensemen playing together. So, you know, that is really voter preference, but I just don't think it should be Makar and no one else. I think that you should be talking about Hedman as well.
I think definitely Aaron Ekblad deserves a mention as well. His importance to the Panthers, especially with how the rest of that defense is a little porous sometimes. And sometimes even the goaltending this year has been a weakness, but Ekblad's been really strong. I think Roman Josi, another top contender, and Adam Fox, now that he's back healthy, will have a chance to get back into the mix as well. You mentioned Devon Taves, and he had a 3-point game against his former team. Nick loved that revenge.
Love that.
In his first matchup against the Islanders. What a bad trade that looks like in hindsight. But speaking of the Avalanche and Makar, how are you viewing the Avalanche? Because I know their style of play come playoff time probably needs to change a little bit. Some adjustments need to be made compared to last year. But of course, this is somebody that everybody's gravitating towards, a team that has one of the best chances to win the cup out of anybody right now.
Yeah, this is a team that's like absolutely stacked with skill up and down their lineup. And I know that style of play, you know, you look at it and you're like, maybe there's not enough sandpaper for the playoffs. I think the biggest thing is they need to be better at adjusting on the fly. And it feels like they're actively doing that this year. I think Bednard talking last week about Burakovsky playing on the first line. You know, we want to see if he can do it come playoff time if we need him to. We don't want it that that's our first experiment with it. Like, that's a lot of good foresight because they're so far ahead. They can afford to make these, you know, experiments now. The thing with it is last year they were getting caught up when Vegas adjusted their style to match up against Colorado and clog them in the neutral zone and match up Mark Stone with Nathan MacKinnon, and it killed them. They just need to be a little bit better at tweaking things. So if that happens, they can split up MacKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen if they need, or, you know, their players can quickly change what they're trying to do. Maybe they're not trying to enter the zone possession every time because it, you know, they couldn't get past Vegas's blue line. Like, there's different things that they're working on now that I think makes them a better team than last year. And I'd be surprised if they're not, you know, one of the final four teams, but you really do never know. And, you know, their goaltending's improved. That's a huge thing. I think Darcy Kuemper is better than he gets credit for. But this is a team that I would say has one of their best chances, but you literally never know in hockey. Like, you can have a bad stretch of four games and tough luck, you're done.
And it's happened a lot to Colorado, as we know, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but they're 23-2-2 in 2022. Hard to say, but I mean, they're really in a league of their own. And Pete, I pose the question to you guys, like, do they really need to go out there and get Claude Giroux? Do they need to get somebody? Because the way I view it, it's Colorado and everybody else. And I would just take my chances with this current roster. How do you view it, Pete?
I'd be interested to see if they move somebody on defense like Sam Girard to try to make that happen. Shayna would be interested to get your thoughts on Sam Girard, because I know he's a player that really overachieved last year and maybe he's underachieving a little bit with everybody healthy for the past few months on that blue line. But obviously he would be a player that short and long term a team like Philly would covet, and at the same time maybe they would get yet another versatile forward in a trade proposal along those lines. So what are your thoughts on Sam Girard? And you think like the Avs should try to move him?
I kind of think that should wait till the off season. Like, I think that if they break up their roster too much now, even if it's to better their team elsewhere, it might be costly this off season. And if you can, I mean, I'm sorry, this postseason, like, you want to have the strongest roster that you can. You want to push the bounds of the cap. You want to push everything you can. If they're going to go all in, and it makes sense to this year, just as it made sense to last year, you know, how many times you're going to be at the top, your players at their peak and whatnot. It's tough to move him now. I do think he overperformed a bit offensively last year because he was getting that first power play usage he typically doesn't. But his defensive game was really strong last year. Like, he was a legitimate Norris, you know, caliber defenseman for much of the season. Obviously, it kind of fell off at the end when his usage changed and whatnot, and that really took him out of the race when he wasn't that first pair, you know, ice time usage and whatever. I think the thing is, a player like Claude Giroux does intrigue me for Colorado because of his versatility. I think that he's in a, you know, he's on a bad team. There's only so much he could do. He's playing well at center, which, you know, they shifted him away a couple times because his game was slipping there a bit. And, you know, he's good on both ends of the ice. He can do a little bit of everything. So a player like that is like the ideal candidate for Colorado, I think, just so you, you know, just add versatility to the mix. If you need to mix up your lines, you have someone that could go literally anywhere. But is trading Girard the right move right now? I would reassess later.
I'm Joe Sakic. I don't think I'm subtracting a single player from that roster. Bowen Byram, I think they're hopeful that he could be back for the Stanley Cup playoffs, which would be huge. And I just think you're looking at prospect capital. I think if you want to make a trade, I'm just saying, like, I don't know if Colorado needs to make a trade. I think oftentimes what happens is teams feel this pressure to add and add and add deadline. And as we always talk about, who's the last team to like go over the top with somebody they picked up at the deadline? Like, a name I can think of is like Jeff Carter, Marian Gabrick. I mean, it's been a while. So that's all I'm saying on that front. But on the contrary, Shayna, the Vegas Golden Knights, I know they got the big victory the other night against San Jose. They're really, really banged up. Are you worried about the potential Vegas actually missing the playoffs this season?
No, I don't think they're going to miss because I don't think the Pacific's division is that strong. You know, we were looking at it at one point like, oh, maybe it'll be Edmonton that misses. I think that Dallas is, you know, really trending up and that's great for them. I think LA is a team to watch too. But I'd be surprised if Vegas outright falls out unless their injuries keep piling up. And we know Pacioretty's out for a while and Mark Stone is obviously out. And when it was just Stone, you kind of had him and Eichel. It was a wash there. You know, you get one back and you lose the other. Now, like, your caliber is still similar. Now that you're talking Pacioretty, like, that's a big blow for them. And if Robin Leonard's healthy, though, which he's back, you know, that's a huge win for them too. So I feel like they should be able to, like, hold pace until everyone can get healthy and back in the lineup. But, you know, it is interesting to watch, especially if Dallas can somehow surge. But I question them a bit because they have one good line and good goaltending, you know, and with LA, it seems like they're firing on all cylinders too. But for Vegas to lose completely out, you know, when you look at the rest of the West and you look at that Pacific division, it would be a shocker to me.
I agree. I think that, and even if they get like the eighth seed, you know, they could still go all the way. I don't think anybody has any doubts on that. Alec Martinez the other day was skating, so keep an eye out if you're in a deeper league. You want to pick him up right now and stash him. I know we've been talking about that for months, but hopefully Alec Martinez is on the horizon with his return from injury. A couple of big returns from injury coming up probably in the next few days. I know Josh Norris is coming back on Thursday for the Ottawa Senators. He's a really good fantasy player, as you know, Shayna, playing on the top line with Brady Tkachuk. And then there's also guys like Martinez and Anthony Mantha's coming up soon. But do you think the Senators and Norris, with the ripple effect of his return, do you think that that team can provide some sneaky value down the stretch of the season? Because now everybody moves down in the lineup to a more appropriate place. That's how I see it, at least.
Yeah, I think they're going to move down to a more appropriate place for now, but I'm curious what happens come the deadline when, you know, if players move. But like, the Senators are a team that any bad team, you know, managers will look at and be like, well, we can't add these players. They play for Detroit. They play for Ottawa. And that, you know, it discounts someone who might be in a top pair role or a top line role. Tim Stützle has been providing a lot of great value, I think, for the Senators and for fantasy managers because he's a good offensive player. He plays more than one position. Alex Formanton is another one, and he's someone that adds sneaky good shorthanded value if you count shorthanded points, which, you know, can be kind of a crapshoot. But you look at someone like him who's really good at, you know, exiting the zone with possession, when he's on the penalty kill and having an overall strong offensive effect. Like, he's one of the best in the league at that. But I think Josh Norris is a good add too. Anyone that plays with Brady Tkachuk on that top line, essentially, if you're going Tkachuk and Stützle, whoever's completing it, you might want to go for, or if Stützle moves to a different line and, you know, Tkachuk's playing on the top line, maybe you want to go for whoever's playing with either of them. Quality of teammates is probably the most important factor when you're looking at players who aren't the top tier. You know, that has the best influence on a player's shot rates. And that's how you can piggyback off those points, especially if your opponent has someone on that opposing team. You know, you might be looking at, say, the Wild, you're playing someone who has Kaprizov on their roster. The best thing you can do to nullify that is to get someone like Zuccarello or even Ryan Hartman, who can piggyback off those points, so they're not as valuable.
Yeah, and don't forget the playoffs are coming up too, so you got to have that in mind in your strategy when you're going against the opposition. And certainly, I think when you look at Brady Tkachuk, I mean, that Norris Tkachuk combo has been huge this season. I want to stay in the Atlantic. I think it's funny, guys, that Wednesday night national exposure, at least here in Canada, it's Buffalo, it's Toronto, and people realize who Tage Thompson is. But this guy's been doing it all season long. Like this, you know, I watch hockey. You guys watch hockey. I've known this all season long. All of a sudden, everybody's tweeting about Tage Thompson. I think he's been tremendous this season. I can't go as far, Shane, as to say they won the Ryan O'Reilly trade because, well, he won a Stanley Cup. But I think they're building something finally in Buffalo, and Thompson's been great this season.
We look at last year and everything went wrong. It was coaching, players were underperforming. But this year, things are trending up, and I think Don Granato instilled a better defensive system. He's definitely elevated the vibe, so all of that works for them. Tage Thompson shifted to center, and sometimes that can hurt a player's game. You know, it really depends. Sometimes a player credits shifting to wing to helping their center game. Sometimes when they shift from wing to center, they add those defensive responsibilities and maybe they're not scoring at the same rate. He is, and he's playing really well, and he's playing with Alex Tuch. He's playing with Jeff Skinner, who everybody seems to forget is still a really good goal scorer, even though last year was absolutely terrible for him in every single which way. But Tage Thompson combines, a lot of size. He gets to the quality areas. He's one of the best shooters in terms of quality and volume on Buffalo. And now he's finishing. So it puts together all the pieces in a way that you want for your fantasy team, especially because he plays all three forward positions. Like, you don't want it that you're adding a depth player and that's, you know, your seventh or eighth forward, and you have to think about moving someone out of left wing because you want to put him in the lineup when they should be your staples every night. When they play every position, you work your lineup in and then you sprinkle those players in. And that's how you should be thinking.
Yeah, that's the best luxury to have. Another guy who has it, Igor Sharangovich for the New Jersey Devils. He's been on a tear lately, playing with Jack Hughes and Dawson Mercer. So keep an eye on that line. And then the other line for New Jersey all of a sudden looks pretty darn good as well, with Jesper Bratt, who's been one of the breakout players of the season, playing with Nico Hischier. So we've actually reached a point, Shayna, even though the Devils are a bad team, they're scoring goals like crazy right now. They're 4-4 in their past eight. They've scored 21 goals in their past four games. So is this Devils offense something that you would say is for real for the rest of the season? Because if people buy in now, you could get some really good value from some of these fantasy pickups, whether it's Sharangovich or Hischier or somebody else.
Yeah, so the Devils' offense, since the holiday break, they've really turned it around. Their defense is better, their offense is better, and even their power play is slightly better, though it's still not great. Sharangovich worked with Hughes last year really well, and then this year they were put back together, and it's good because you have someone who's good in that net front area and getting to the quality areas, and then you have Hughes who can do a little bit of everything. Dawson Mercer on that line is great for him. He was, you know, great from a fantasy context and great for the Devils when Hughes was out. When he returned, he moved to that third line, and you could see like the quality of teammates goes down, the role changes, and it obviously weighed on his game a bit. Now he's playing on the wing, so again, fewer defensive responsibilities, that helps him out, and playing with two of the team's best. That's, you know, another added benefit. When you talk about that other line though, and you look at Bratt has been their best player all year. You know, this is the thing. You have Hughes and you have Bratt. They paired them up at one point together, which I thought was a mistake, because you have two of the best puck carriers together. And that's great and wonderful that for that line, but it's going to hurt everywhere else in the lineup. Now that they're split up, it gives Hischier, you know, a good player to go alongside. And I think his line mates this year have been, you know, one of the more suspect on that team. And it really is clicking for them at even strength. The thing with them is like, they can hold on and stay in these games and their goaltending falls apart. So on the one hand, that's absolutely crushing and it's tough to keep up. On the other hand, this team has to score these goals to keep up. You can look at that game against Chicago the other night once the floodgates opened, it was really tough for them to keep up, but they had to keep scoring goals. Otherwise, they couldn't keep pace with their goaltending. So it's like this really tricky situation for them because they can only go so far as their goaltending. And it's tough to say that, but like they're not getting league average goaltending most nights. But their offense is doing their best to hold par with them. So, you know, there are definitely benefits there, even if you look at losses piling up at times.
And it's nothing against who's playing, right? Like you lose Mackenzie Blackwood, Jonathan Bernier's done for the season. So, I mean, they're the next best options. And certainly when I look at New Jersey, take the over. That's my advice from a betting standpoint, because they always seem to hit on that front. A two-prong question, Pete, we can start with you. Mackenzie Blackwood, is he still the future of the New Jersey Devils? And number two, I think it's never too early to start ranking players for next season. You know, I got a soft spot for Jack Hughes. I know his trainer. He's been unbelievable this season, especially in the last little while. Where are we looking at ranking Jack Hughes guys for next season too?
I mean, Jack Hughes is going to be pretty high on my board. Maybe not top 50 overall, but pretty close to it. The level of confidence I have in him. He's a multi-point machine. And then as far as the Devils goaltending, I've been a little discouraged the past 2 years by Blackwood. Unfortunately, can't stay healthy. There's been some COVID things. There's been some injuries. But even when he's been healthy, he hasn't been that same, you know, young stud that we saw like 3-4 years ago when he was a rookie and he was looking like the Devils goalie of the future. I'm interested to see. It's been a small sample size, Shayna, but Nico Daws has put up some decent peripherals, 909 save percentage. He hasn't played a ton, but he's been winning some games more often than not. Do you see anything here? Is this an opportunity for this kid? He's only 21. You don't usually see 21-year-old goalie playing in the NHL for an extended stretch, only rare cases. So is Nico Daws, do you know anything about him? Is there anything encouraging about him, like analytics-wise, that you've seen?
Yeah, so Nico Daws, I think, is thrown into a far from ideal situation. I don't know how much any goaltender can truly succeed like the way things are going in New Jersey, but I think he's giving them their best shot. You know, below the surface, his numbers are pretty average, which is fine considering the team he's playing behind. And, you know, you account for those earlier games and, you know, you can see as of late, they're getting better. You know, the last couple games, he was average. He played a back-to-back against Columbus, which I don't know if it was necessarily the right decision for him, but you look at it and you go, what were the other options? You know, John Gillies has been struggling. And this is, you know, it is what it is. If any team should be looking for a goaltender at the deadline, it's them, even if it's a short-term option, just to take a little weight off Nico Daws, because I think he's the superior option of the two. I think the thing with like young goalies is goaltending is like the most volatile position. We all know that. I also think it's the one that we get the most wrong. There's like this idea that a younger goalie can't thrive sometimes, or that they can't handle, you know, a starting workload. And I think that is true. Sometimes it helps that they come in there, a backup tandem, and then take over. And it's that kind of process. But I do think sometimes we look at a goalie's age and kind of like shrug at them. And we're like, maybe you're not ready for this, instead of looking at what they can do. And for the Devils, you know, he's doing everything he can, given every single goaltender has been below expectations this season. But like, I am curious how much he starts down the stretch if they don't get someone else, because I think there are legitimate questions about the future of the, you know, of the net in New Jersey. I don't think Mackenzie Blackwood's the answer. I think, you know, yes, it was a tough circumstance the last 2 years, you know, with the team he was playing behind, but he wasn't responding well to that workload either. So there's definitely concerns there that if you want to be a playoff team and you want to start trending in the right direction, you need to have a little more stability in net than I think that he can provide.
The answer has to be John Gibson of the Anaheim Ducks. Like, I think that's an interesting name to watch for over the next little while. Maybe not so much the deadline, but into the offseason. Of course, see Lucas Dostal score a goal in the American Hockey League. And I think he is supremely the future of the Anaheim Ducks. So I'd certainly look out for that. I'm happy you brought up young goaltenders. Jake Ottinger has been on an absolute roll since the All-Star break. 7-1-1. I think you make a good point too when it comes to young goalies, that there's going to be turbulent periods. Look at Spencer Knight this season, who many of us tabbed as a top 100 fantasy player. Carter Hart's had a really good under the radar year despite the struggles of Philadelphia. I think patience is a virtue when it comes to these youngsters, and Dallas is realizing that right now, Shayna.
Yeah, I think Jake Ottinger has been outstanding for them. Like, this is a team that they're not a bad defensive team. They do allow a lot of rush chances at 5-on-5, but they're generally not a bad defensive team. They're a pretty poor offensive team if Jason Robertson, Ruka Hintz, and Joe Pavelski aren't on the ice. And, you know, you look at Ottinger and he's saving more goals than expected. I think his season-wide number, he's up to 3. But if you, you know, just hone in post-All-Star break, it's way better than that. You know, he's doing everything they need to be competitive on a nightly basis and then some, which is what you want when you're in the playoff race. You know, goaltending could be, you know, the great equalizer. It makes or breaks a team. And in Dallas, that's definitely the case with Ottinger. I think Braden Holtby, like, and him are an interesting tandem. You know, when it was three goaltenders, it was a little more chaotic and you didn't know where Ottinger was going to fit into it. Now there's two. It's very clear. You have the veteran goaltender and you have Ottinger, and they went through that phase of kind of going 50-50 in every other game. But now it's really his crease and he's taking over and he's running with the opportunity. So yeah, there, you definitely have to be patient. You have to keep an eye on a coach's strategies too. You know, you look at like Minnesota, and for a time it was Cam Talbot's net. Then Talbot got injured and Kakkonen got his chance to shine, and he was outplaying, you know, Talbot's numbers from season start. So if you just focus in on that stretch, there was a lot to be encouraged by. Then they were splitting the net equally. And now you really see it, that the two goaltenders are turning in the opposite directions. So as long as coaches are perceptive to that and not so stuck in their ways of keeping a tandem just for the sake of sharing the crease, you know, you can really benefit from that if you can spot those trends. And with Ottinger, the trend was there and the coaches ran with it. So I'm curious about, you know, if Minnesota starts doing the same.
Just the fact that Ottinger has emerged from that four goalie rotation in the depth chart in the preseason is a wonder, but I think it's the guy that we thought would eventually be their number one, and it's happening sooner than expected because Bishop retired and Khudobin's out of the mix and everything that you mentioned with his competition with Braden Holtby. Switching gears to the Eastern Conference, the New York Rangers have been one of the biggest stories of the season, and I know that you cover them extensively. You have in the past, Shayna. I'm interested to get your take on Alexi Lafreniere because he's been playing more often lately on the top line with Zibanejad and Kreider, goals in three of his past four games. But with this player, it always seems like false hope for some reason. Are you seeing things that you're liking that you think could stick for the rest of the season and beyond? Is this the beginning of breakout season for Lafreniere?
Yeah, so this is the player I'm writing about him and first overall picks today to run tomorrow. And he's also in my fantasy column because, you know, his stretch on this top line. I think the thing with him is there's always been expectations. And it's tough to look at the results and not acknowledge the context around it. And that comes from last year's usage. You know, he was playing third line minutes primarily. And the team could use him in the third line capacity. They had Panarin, they had Kreider ahead of him. So there wasn't as much pressure, plus they wanted to win. And you have to reckon that. It depends, you know, management might have an idea of we should be developing players, but the coaches want to win on a nightly basis. And, you know, they act rationally to deal with that, to try to put their team in a best position to succeed. And by all numbers and by all, you know, metrics, you could look at it and go, well, Lafreniere in the third line, while Panarin and Kreider in those prime top 6 minutes makes the most sense. He got a shot to shift to the right this year. And the coaches did end up putting him back on the left on the third line. And then, you know, quality of teammates goes down. You're playing with Philip Hedl and Julien Gauthier or Barkley Gaudreau. There's a lot less offensive opportunity there. Now he has that stretch on the top line. He's clicking with Kreider and with Zibanejad, even though he's playing on his offside. And most importantly, he has confidence, which he didn't get from power play usage. And I think that's so important to remember. He barely got power play opportunity last year, and he barely gets it this year because they lean on their top unit so heavily. It's less about him. It's more about that, you know, really hot top unit. So the second he gets some confidence going at even strength, it'll trickle into the rest of his game. Just as had he gotten the confidence on the power play, like a lot of young players do, it'll trickle into their game at 5-on-5. So since he hasn't had that, I think the deck was stacked against him a bit. But now he's elevated his game. He's playing some of his best hockey, and it's really like creating this different situation for the Rangers than they probably anticipated, because, you know, the original plan wasn't for him to play on the right. It was to have Kako, who got hurt, maybe see if one of their prospects could step up or anything else, you know? So there's this huge gap in the lineup and he's filling it and he's playing really well, that I don't see why they'd move him off that top line unless something drastically changes. But everything looks like it's trending in the right direction now, finally.
Yeah, weirdly enough, like the Sammy Blais injury, like threw a wrench into the issues of the New York Rangers up front at the very beginning of the year. And certainly we get tons of questions probably from New York Rangers fans about Alexi Lafreniere. I'm probably steering clear, guys, until I see like a longer and, you know, a stronger sample size, we should say, over a 15, 20 game stretch. But yeah, he's definitely a guy I would look at in DFS, certainly right now with what he's contributing. I want to wrap with this. Igor Shesterkin, as you know, is trying to become the third player this millennium to win the Vezina and the Hart Trophy beside Carey Price and Jose Theodore. Shayna, how realistic of a threat do you think he truly is for both awards? At least the Vezina, I think he's got locked up, in my opinion, at this time, but the Hart Trophy too.
I think he should be a lock for the Vezina. And, you know, he's playing outstanding hockey in front of a team that is not nearly as good as their record shows because of his play. The Hart Trophy, it's a little bit trickier because you do have Austin Matthews and you have Shesterkin. I think those are the two candidates that everybody should be focusing on. And I don't think that there's a wrong answer. You know, Matthews is doing so much in Toronto. Yes, he's surrounded by talent. Yes, he plays with Mitch Marner. But, you know, he's that much of a difference maker. He is legitimately the most valuable player in Toronto. And if he wasn't there, that team wouldn't be, you know, nearly the contender that they are. But on the flip side, you have that same conversation with Shesterkin. He is the most valuable player. And I think if a goalie can easily be a team's most valuable player. It needs to be to such a significant extent for him to be in the Hart conversation, and Shesterkin is. So how it all goes down the stretch is really going to decide everything, especially because recency drives so many decisions. But there's a good battle between the two of these. And it's tough to reckon because you're talking about two completely different, you know, situations, positions. When it's a center versus a wing, that's a conversation. When it's a forward versus a defenseman, it's a conversation. Now you're talking a forward versus a goaltender. You know, that's apples and oranges. So it really is how you define most valuable player. But there's a good, you know, argument for both of them. And I'm really curious how this develops because he's making a great case to win both trophies. Absolutely. But so is Matthews. Two of them could be going home with two trophies this year, really, because True. Matthews could easily win that goal scoring race. You know, he can put up goals in every which way. And it's one of the more sustainable paces of the leaders.
If Matthews is healthy, I have no question that he's going to be able to sustain this. It's not even that I fault Shesterkin at all because he's been out of this world, but the possession metrics of the Rangers worried me around the All-Star break. They're still bottom two in the league in shot attempts percentage, Shayna. So last one for me, like, do you think that there's a chance that eventually the team struggles in that area come back to bite them? And then whether it be, it affects the future's appeal of Shesterkin to win the Vezina and or Hart, or even maybe leads to a first round exit reality check in the first round of the playoffs. Do you see that weakness eventually catching up to the Rangers, or do you think they can make a deep playoff run?
It all depends on Shesterkin. It really does. And I don't think that's the sustainable way to do it. I think that's the strategy they've relied on for the last 15 years. They had Henrik Lundqvist who could, you look at 2014, they had no business going as far as they did. And he was out of this world. The tough part is that their first round opponent is likely going to be the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I'm really curious how they approach the deadline too, because they have so many expiring contracts that I'd be shocked if they don't go all in. I don't know how the Rangers can measure up to it. You know, this is a team though, that given the way Shesterkin's playing, they might be a little more inclined to go for it and to spend at the deadline. If they can bolster up that forward depth, maybe add, you know, a third pair defenseman that's not Ben Chiarot, because I don't understand why teams want to spend a first round pick on that. Then maybe they really could stack up, but I think they need to do something up front. I think it all comes down to that. If they can just get a better score, and maybe it's not for their top six because you have Kako if he returns and Lafreniere, and it's for that third line, then you have something there. But a third line right now, you know, it's Julien Gauthier, Philip Hedl, and Greg McKegg. Like that's not going to cut it. So if they can improve somewhere, especially that middle six, I think is the best way to put it. Then if Lafreniere stays on the top line, then they have a legitimate shot. But it's a little bit tricky there because they are relying so much on goaltending.
Shayna, why don't you tee us up? What's up next for you and your work?
So I have a story later today coming out on Cole Caulfield and his play under Marty St. Louis. Tomorrow I have something on Hughes and Shesterkin and, you know, first overall picks, plus my fantasy column, and a couple stories coming out next week, you know, deadline related, and something on Jonathan Huberdeau as well.
Great stuff, Shayna. Follow her on Twitter for sure. And congratulations on winning Fantasy Sports Writer Association Hockey Writer of the Year. That's high praise for sure. You deserve it. And
thank you.
Keep up the great work for The Athletic and also Sportsnet and Sport Logic. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Great to get Shayna on the show. Some of our plays coming up, but first and foremost, a lot to go through in the fantasy world. Pete, I have to ask you firstly, how'd you celebrate your Kraken Day? Do you have a shot of tequila? Happy Kraken Day. Happy belated Kraken Day.
I didn't really celebrate other than watching the game last night against the Predators. Big win. But I mean, I don't have any Kraken players on my fantasy team. I'm considering picking up, Mark Giordano, just with the opportunity that maybe he could be traded, play in a top four for a better team, add some leadership to a contender. And he's been scoring more often than not over the past couple of weeks, even for a bad team in Seattle. So yeah, I think with Giordano, like we hear like he's definitely getting traded. Like, sounds like the GM came out and said it. So, you know, are you flocking towards Giordano, who's a little bit more seasoned, or are you talking about like maybe a Jacob Chychrun being more attractive fantasy wise in terms of a player you could pick up now that's probably going to get moved?
I feel like GMs are reading my Twitter and seeing someone make a trade and they're just trolling me, because as I documented on Wednesday night, three of the last four trades in the NHL have involved a depth goalie going for future consideration. So any deal of consequence, I'm waiting with bated breath for. Certainly, I think we all knew this when Giordano was selected by the Kraken, of course, the first captain in franchise history, that this could happen. I think it's very, very likely. I think to answer your question, I'm probably steering more towards Chychrun. I think obviously there's more appeal in that file, but honestly, it comes down to fit. Like, you know, the name I've really been hearing on the Chychrun front, and obviously I got a lot of people who cover that team and are insiders or whatever you want to call them there. The Los Angeles Kings seem to be circling and circling and circling for quite a bit of time. You know, if he goes there, he's stuck behind Drew Doughty offensively on PP1. So I think it's about fit too, Pete.
Right. And some people are speculating about, could the New York Rangers be in on that conversation? I mean, I would feel so much better about the Rangers getting out of the first round, or maybe winning multiple rounds if they got Jacob Chychrun, whether he's a sidekick to Adam Fox or on a separate pair. I think it could be a huge addition for them. And they've done business with the Coyotes before, multiple trades, right? Like Ranta, Grabner,
Duclair,
Yandel, Duclair, all these swaps over the years. So, you know, if the Rangers can offer what they're looking for, that might be the best fit, because that would probably take their offense to a whole new level. And it would probably help some of those concerns that we were talking about with Shayna on the back end and just possession wise.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think on Chychrun too, like I hope Arizona doesn't feel the need where they have to make this trade. I mean, they control this guy still for a couple more years. I think if you don't get the offer that you want leading up to the March 21 deadline at 3 Eastern, I don't do it. I wait till the offseason. Heck, I don't even know why they want to trade Jacob Chychrun, but probably a conversation for another day. I want some food for thought as well on a debate we've been having all season long here on the podcast, Petey. Jordan Binnington versus Ville Husso. So Binnington's 2-0-0 after a reset. He's made 55 saves, I should say, on the last 56 shots. Ville Husso, last four games, 13 goals on 133 shots, a 902 save percentage. Is Binnington starting to grab that net back, is my question to you, Pete Jensen?
He's pulling at it a little bit. He's getting an opportunity here. And again, with the contract, they're gonna give him every chance to get back into the mix. Right. Husso is he's an expiring contract. Yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Like they're not going to be able to sign Husso to big money. So when you really think about it, they need the St. Louis Blues this season and in the years to come, they need Jordan Binnington to work out. Otherwise they got a bad situation on their hands. So Jordan Binnington rejoined the top 25 goalie rankings on NHL.com/fantasy. He's right in the same range as guys like Vitek Vanacek, Mikko Koskinen, Jonathan Quick, who's been a little up and down lately. So, but still, top 25 is good placement and means he should be rostered once again after that bad stretch in almost any fantasy league out there from a very strong team.
Tread carefully is what we can advise you to do when it comes to Binnington, given what we've seen throughout this season. But I think there's some buy low significance and look there when it comes to Jordan Binnington. The other name I want to bring up before our plays, Pete, suddenly the Nashville Predators have dropped six of the last eight since the All-Star break. We know some of the teams vying for playoff contention. It's getting a bit hairy for them. And, you know, the big name to watch for here is Philip Forsberg. I wonder if he could, weirdly enough, emerge as maybe the biggest deadline piece to go. Obviously, we know there's a bit of contention, we should call it, with the contract. And then I started, you know, putting some numbers together last night. Like, are they prepared to pay four guys around $35 million bucks in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough because clearly Josi is the centerpiece of the team, but Forsberg's a better player than some of the other guys that they have massive contracts with, tied up with, whether it's Duchesne or Ryan Johansson. So I'd rather see them keep Forsberg. I think the only way they trade Forsberg is if they go into some kind of a bottoming out, like similar to what the San Jose Sharks have gone through over the past couple of weeks, where they win like one or two games between now and March 21st. Then you'll probably see them trade Philip Forsberg. Otherwise, they're in contention. They have, I think they have an edge over teams like Edmonton, you know, Vancouver, some of these other teams on the outside looking in, Dallas, Winnipeg. I still like what Nashville has brought to the table this year over all those teams. So I think that unless they really fall off a cliff here, they'll remain in contention and they'll keep Forsberg at the deadline, as they should.
They lost on Kraken Day and Cali Yarncroke scored the revenge goal there. I just wonder, because at the minimum, you're starting with $8 million in conversation and probably at 8 years with Philip Forsberg. He's probably looking for nine and a half. Let's be honest there. But that's obviously an issue for David Poile. Let's get to some plays, Pete, and we'll wrap. Thursday night, I think there could be some offense in Ottawa, Florida. How do you feel about that?
I like getting Norris into your lineup in DFS and season long. He's been limited to 36 of Ottawa's 52 games, yet he still leads them in goals and he still leads them in power play goals. And he plays with Brady Tkachuk. So get him in your DFS lineup. Make sure he's rostered in season long leagues in every league you play in. If he's not, pick him up. Now's the time to trade for him. We've been talking about the Senators having some sneaky fantasy value. I think it gets even better when, you know, you have your top line center back. I know Batherson's not there still for the time being, but really big fan of Josh Norris as a player. They started strong against Tampa the other day when I was talking about them, but then of course Tampa took full control of that game, but wouldn't be surprised to see them score 4+ goals, even in a loss to the leaky Florida Panthers these days.
Yeah, I would probably be leaning towards the over in that game. I think offense of plenty. And lastly, I wanted to bring up a battle between the two best teams in hockey right now, in my opinion. Calgary visiting Colorado on Saturday. Pete, I can't wait for that hockey game.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah, Calgary's won like, 12 of their past 13 games. And even Toffoli's heating up, still on that depth role. But first power play is doing wonders for that guy. So he had a multi-point game the other day. So that's good to see. I'm also looking at, you know, I think it's a measuring stick game for the Canucks tonight. The Islanders are kind of in disarray. Islanders haven't been a good home team. I was looking at Elias Pettersson in DFS. He's only 4,300. This guy has 21 points in his past 18 games. Very surprised that his price is that low. We've been in bounce back form for Pettersson for about a month and a half now, and it doesn't seem like many people are noticing. So the Canucks definitely win that game. They definitely need that game. I don't know if they'll win it, but the Islanders are vulnerable right now for sure.
I like that. And now is the time of the year that we always like to exercise patience in the fantasy world. When we get those questions, Pete, November, this is when you start to reap the benefits, right? Of holding on to a Pettersson or buying low on a Pettersson. Could guys like that really start to take off? And that's why I always, my biggest rule of thumb when asked about fantasy hockey is patience is a virtue. So I'm feeling EP 40 for rest of season. And I wouldn't sleep on those Vancouver Canucks, Pete.
One team I wouldn't sleep on either is the Blue Jackets. I know a week ago when we were talking with Meany, we kind of dismissed the fact that they could be in on the playoff picture in the East, but a couple of things have happened since then, right? It seems like Ilya Samsonov may be dealing with another injury. They called up Fukali, and I know that Vanacek's going to get the start in their next game. They are really struggling lately, the Capitals, and the Jackets are playing pretty well, weathering the storm right now. And now they got Merzlikins back, right? Elvis. So does that change your thoughts at all? Could Columbus get in on this conversation over like the, you know, tried and true Washington Capitals?
I'm really trying, Pete. I just can't do it. Werenski and Boakvist are still out too, right? They got Christensen, the rookie, scored his first NHL goal the other night. I mean, it's just tough to replace guys of that ilk. I view Columbus as a competitive team, but I really can't see them get it. Like, and that's the only good thing I would, you know, the positive news for Washington, Pete, they've really, really been struggling, but they've, you know, are afforded to do this because of what they've built in the chamber and the standings over the last little while, sort of the distance they have between them and anybody else in the standings.
Right. And so Columbus is 8 points behind the Capitals with one game in hand. That's where it sits right now. So it's, I mean, you look at the goal differentials are drastic between those two teams, even with Washington struggles, plus 20, Columbus minus 17. They're kind of trying to make up for a bad couple of months, right, of hockey. But they're doing a nice job. Line A has been one of the most valuable players in fantasy over the past month of the season. And I think he gives them a chance. If he's firing like this, he gives them an outside chance. So keep an eye on that from a future standpoint. And they are competitive even if they don't make the playoffs. So thanks again for Shayna joining us from The Athletic. Does a great job for them. For Nick Alberga, producer Bob Bender, Pete Jensen, talk to you next week. We're up to week 20. We're getting close to the fantasy playoffs. Looking forward to talking about all the best pickups. Hit us up over the weekend with your fantasy and your futures picks and plays and get our thoughts. And we'll talk to you next week. NHL Fantasy on Ice.